This is Monday, March 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up...
I have been authorized by the Department of Justice to confirm that the FBI, as part of our counterintelligence mission, is investigating the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election.
FBI Director James Comey revealing the ongoing investigation. We have the latest for you. Also ahead, President Trump's pick for Supreme Court Justice goes before another congressional hearing. And what was accomplished when the U.S. Secretary of State met with China's leaders? You'll hear about that. All of that and more on today's International Edition. Federal Bureau of Investigation Director James Comey confirmed his agency is actively investigating Russian attempts to interfere in the U.S. election, including any possible coordination with the Trump campaign.
I have been authorized by the Department of Justice to confirm that the FBI, as part of our counterintelligence mission, is investigating the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. And that includes investigating the nature of any links between individuals associated with the Trump campaign and the Russian government, and whether there was any coordination between the campaign and Russia's efforts.
Comey was testifying before the House of Representatives Intelligence Committee along with National Security Agency Chief Admiral Mike Rogers. Trump Monday derided any suggestion that his campaign colluded with Russian interests to help him win the White House, saying it was an excuse made up by Democrats for losing the election. In a string of messages on his Twitter account, Trump said that James Clapper, the director of national intelligence under former President Barack Obama and others, stated that there is no evidence that he had joined with Moscow to help his cause. The story is fake news, and everyone knows it, Trump said. Trump, 2 months into his presidency, said the Democrats made up and pushed the Russian story as an excuse for running a terrible campaign, adding that the campaign of former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was presumed to have a big advantage in the country's electoral college that determined the outcome and still lost. In his tweets, Trump did not mention his unsubstantiated allegation that former President Barack Obama wiretapped Trump Tower headquarters in the weeks before last November's presidential election. Congressman Adam Schiff, the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, asked the FBI director about the president's original tweets charging President Obama with wiretapping his offices.
First, the president claimed, quote, terrible. Just found out that Obama had my wires tapped in Trump Tower just before the victory. Nothing found. This is McCarthyism, unquote. Director Comey, was the president's statement that Obama had his wires tapped in Trump Tower a true statement?
With respect to the president's tweets about alleged wiretapping directed at him by the prior administration, I have no information that supports those tweets, and we have looked carefully inside the FBI. The Department of Justice has asked me to share with you that the answer is the same for the Department of Justice and all its components. The department has no information that supports those tweets.
The president accused Mr. Obama and presumably the FBI of engaging in McCarthyism. As you understand the term McCarthyism, do you think President Obama or the FBI was engaged in such conduct?
I'm not going to try and characterize the tweets themselves. All I can tell you is we have no information that supports them.
Were you engaged in McCarthyism, Director Comey?
Try very hard not to engage in any isms of any kind, including McCarthyism.
The president second stated, quote, is it legal for a sitting president to be wiretapping a race for president prior to an election, turned down by a court earlier a new low, unquote. Director Comey, can you answer the president's question? Would it be legal for President Obama to have ordered a wiretap of Donald Trump?
I'm not going to characterize or respond to the tweets themselves. I can tell you in general, as Admiral Rogers and I were just saying, there is a statutory framework in the United States under which courts grant permission for electronic surveillance, either in a criminal case or a national security case, based on a showing of probable cause, carefully overseen. It's a rigorous, rigorous process that involves all three branches of government, and it's one we've lived with since the late 1970s. That's how it works. So no individual in the United States can direct electronic surveillance of anyone. It has to go through an application process, ask a judge. The judge can then make the order.
So President Obama could not unilaterally order a wiretap of anyone?
No president could.
For more than 2 weeks now, the U.S. President Donald Trump has refused to back down on his wiretapping allegation, even as a string of officials, including House Speaker Paul Ryan and the top Republican and Democratic lawmakers on both the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, have said there is no evidence to support the president's March 4th claims that he made. Joining us, as always, is International Edition social media guru Andrew Palczewski. A lot of people talking about this, I take it.
Hashtag Comey hearing has been trending all morning and is going to continue trending as long as this hearing is going on, and probably sometime afterwards, as people on social media parse through the words of all these different players, from the FBI director to the Republican and Democratic leaders of the House Intelligence Committee. And it's kind of interesting. You can tell just looking at social media when one of them has said something that sparked a lot of interest, because their name will pop up suddenly on the trending list. That isms line that we heard from Director Comey that was being used a lot on social media, as well as a quote from Admiral Rogers. He said, if I spent time worrying about unsourced media reports, I'd never get any work done when questioned about that. So you see these little bits and moments coming out on social media. You're also seeing a lot of talk about Comey, not just because he is there testifying, but because he's kind of gone through in the digital realm quite a swing of favorability. He's gone from being vilified on the left for releasing information about the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails right before the election, to now being championed for saying that there's no way that the Trump Tower could have been wiretapped. So you're seeing a lot of divergent opinions on the FBI director on social media.
It is a fascinating story. There are other things happening. Maybe quickly, anything trending as far as the Supreme Court nominee is concerned?
Well, that's the fascinating thing, is that at the same time that this hearing is going on, you're having a hearing for Judge Neil Gorsuch to fill that vacant seat on the Supreme Court. And one person tweeted out, they said, C-SPAN has never been this exciting. C-SPAN, of course, carries the wall-to-wall coverage of all the House and Senate hearings. But it is actually very interesting. As you see this hearing going on, you're also seeing people talk about Gorsuch, and you're seeing people kind of watching both. And the way that a lot of people are able to do that is through social media, between Facebook Live, Periscope, people that are live blogging and tweeting and offering live reaction. So even though a lot of the talk is about this Comey hearing, you are getting these bits from the Gorsuch hearing as well, and you can monitor both. So, well, in previous times, you might have had to flip really quickly from the different TV channels. You can have both of them up on your desktop and have them right there and react to both in real time.
Well, you can have 40 things, too, but you can barely see little postage stamp-sized little pictures on there. Right? Andrew, thank you once again. Andrew Palczewski talking about social media. This is International Edition. Among our top stories, as you would imagine, what we've been talking about. Federal Bureau of Investigation Director James Comey confirms his agency is actively investigating Russian attempts to interfere in the U.S. election, including any possible coordination with the Trump campaign. The U.S. Senate is holding its first confirmation hearing for Neil Gorsuch, the judge President Donald Trump has nominated to fill a long vacancy on the Supreme Court. Syrian forces Monday counterattacked rebels in the capital Damascus a day after the opposition fighters staged a surprise assault on government-held neighborhoods in the northeastern part of the city. Pakistan opened all border crossings with landlocked Afghanistan for travelers and trade convoys a month after closing them on grounds that terrorists were using Afghan soil for plotting deadly attacks against the country. Expanded coverage of these and other stories on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition on VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
New observations by an international team of astronomers show that huge galaxies created some 10 billion years ago during a peak in galaxy formation were comprised of mostly baryonic or normal matter and very little of the mysterious dark matter that tends to dominate much younger galaxies. The astronomers, led by Germany's Max Planck Institute for Extraterrestrial Physics, made their findings after measuring the rotation of six massive and distant star-forming galaxies. Using the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope, the group of scientists said they found that the outer regions of these old galaxies rotated much slower than areas closer to their cores. That's different than much younger spiral galaxies. The astronomers think this difference suggests that there is less dark matter present in the ancient galaxies than had been expected. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition. President Trump has been critical of Beijing for not taking stronger measures to restrain its ally in Pyongyang. China recently halted all coal imports for this year, but also has indicated it is reluctant to implement harsh measures that could trigger widespread instability in the collapse of the Kim government. Just days after Pyongyang claimed to have tested a new, more powerful rocket engine, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping on Saturday seemed more conciliatory. To what degree the two world powers are willing to cooperate to resolve the North Korean nuclear threat remains an issue of debate. We take it out to Beijing, where VOA Beijing Bureau Chief Bill Ai joins us. Will the U.S. and China cooperate on the issue of North Korea any further?
Well, on the issue of Korea, I think that's a big question. Obviously, they both want to address the situation. They both feel that the situation is, as Rex Tillerson mentioned in a brief press conference that they held on Saturday, that the situation is of concern. But how far China is willing to go is, has always and continues to be a question. What they really did is set the atmosphere here and tried to clear the air a bit, because there's been a lot said by President Trump, both before he was elected. And even, you know, as Tillerson was arriving, right before he arrived in Beijing, he tweeted about the issue and again said that China wasn't doing enough to help. So the two had a chance to sit down and try to build some good feeling, but really the key is going to be what happens when the two meet. They really need to sit down and have a face-to-face, and that was another thing, another key focus of Tillerson's visit is trying to set up a possible visit by Xi Jinping to the United States. We're hearing that that possibly could take place early next month.
What is China's stance? We keep hearing the stance that China is approaching this very carefully because they don't want a rush of North Koreans heading across their border. Is that correct?
Right. They don't want regime collapse. They don't want the situation getting too unstable to the point that they have, of course, a refugee crisis, right? But at the same time, there are those who would argue that China hasn't done enough over the past decade or so to try to stop or rein in North Korea. And because of that, we are where we are at this point today. Tillerson and Xi Jinping were meeting on Sunday. We had Korean state media announcing this new engine test, this latest engine test, and the threat that North Korea poses to the region, United States as well, is becoming more and more of reality. And time is not on anyone's side who is trying to deal with this situation.
Let's open this scope just a bit to other issues. Number one, China's moves in the South China Sea, human rights situations. Were all of these things, as you understand it, covered in the meetings between Tillerson and Chinese leadership?
Well, we understood that there was going to be a lot of issues that they were going to talk about, like trade, human rights. All of these issues, we are told, always come up. But really, it seemed like the majority, the real focus of this visit was trying to get at this North Korean issue because it's more pressing, and also to set up a face-to-face meeting between the two leaders so that they could really, you know, start to lay out the groundwork and get a better sense of where each other stands on these issues. Obviously, we've heard a lot of statements, but to meet face-to-face and to talk about these things. We did not hear any statements really about the South China Sea.
Overall, what seems to be the stance of the Chinese government toward the Trump administration?
Well, I think there was a lot of nervousness a few months back with the phone call to Tsai Ing-wen, Taiwan's president, his comments about the One China policy. There was a lot of uncertainty, and then the phone call came between President Xi and Trump, and his reiteration that Washington would honor its One China policy, and that seemed to calm things down a bit. But there's still a lot of water under the bridge here, and they need to sit down and to talk with one another and lay things out. They obviously, over this weekend, were trying to create a better atmosphere, and it seems pretty much that they achieved that, that they've gotten off to a good start. But there's still a lot of things that could happen. And the Chinese, you know, much like other countries in the rest of the world, that they're not very certain about, you know, what's coming down the pike or what other surprises there might be. But still, when it comes to the issue of North Korea, they continue to put the focus on things like the deployment of the THAAD defense missile system in South Korea, these exercises which happen every year, which they're saying are larger this year, more threatening and adding to instability. And that they almost, the way they phrase it, though, is like this is the real root of the instability, you know, the way they portray what's going on here, and almost blame the United States and South Korea for kind of stirring things up and making things more difficult.
VOA Beijing Bureau Chief Bill Ide. Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome.
This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Do you love music from Africa and the world? VOA has the latest hits, interviews with the artists, and we are glad to take your requests. The Voice of America has what you're looking for. We have music shows to please everyone. Join us on the radio or on the internet to listen day or night. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on your favorite program. Just follow your ears. Music from Africa and the world. We've got it on VOA.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Senate confirmation hearings are underway for President Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominee, federal appellate judge Neil Gorsuch. VOA's Michael Bowman reports from Capitol Hill. If confirmed, Gorsuch would fill a vacancy created by the death of conservative Justice Antonin Scalia more than a year ago.
In a day of lengthy opening statements, Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley lauded Gorsuch's conservative judicial philosophy.
You should be concerned about the preservation of our constitutional order and, most importantly, the separation of powers. We have before us today a nominee whose body of professional work is defined by an unfailing commitment to these principles.
Democrats are still fuming that Republicans held the seat vacant by refusing to give former President Barack Obama's nominee a hearing. Senator Dianne Feinstein said there is much Gorsuch must speak to in the days ahead.
Our job is to assess how this nominee's decisions will impact the American people and whether he will protect the legal and constitutional rights of all Americans, not just the wealthy and the powerful.
Republicans hold a slim two-seat Senate majority and would need eight Democrats to support Gorsuch should a three-fifths vote be required to advance his nomination in the full chamber. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
Well, there's been all kinds of actors, different kinds of people acting in movies, but this might be a first. It now seems that robots are becoming commonplace in many areas of society, from manufacturing to medicine to our homes. Now a robot is taken to the stage in a British play called Spillikin. A humanoid robot plays the male companion of a woman with Alzheimer's disease. VOA's Deborah Block tells us more about it.
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
The robothespian, as the droid is being called,
plays the lead in the unconventional play.
It's a story about a robot maker. All his life he builds robots. He develops a degenerative illness in midlife and realizes he's not going to live to remain a companion to his wife. His wife by now is developing early Alzheimer's. So he builds his final creation, his final robot, to be a companion to his wife.
British actress Judy Norman plays the woman with Alzheimer's. During the performance, she mostly talks to the robot,
was it really?
But also shares a kiss.
When he looks at me, it's going to sound weird, but he's very affectionate, and I like him. I really like him.
The show's director says the concept for the play came from a real robot maker.
The idea for the play started with the robot maker approaching us and offering us the use of one of his incredible robot creations to use in a play. He'd seen one of our plays before. He liked us as a local theatre company. And he's been making robots for 10 years, and you find them in science museums all over the world. But he's never really had one of his robots as a character in a play.
Tell me what it's like to act with humans.
Humans have very small brains and are quite unreliable, which can be frustrating.
But Norman found the experience anything but frustrating.
Are you better?
Yes.
This show has proved to me that really working with a robot is seriously not that different than working with a normal actor.
What is not so normal is the time it takes to make sure the robothespian is in sync during the 1.5-hour play. The robot is connected to a cord that goes to a control room with a laptop.
We have pre-programmed every single thing the robot says and every single thing the robot does, all the moves. There's about nearly 400 separate cues, but they're made up of other files all stuck together. So there's probably a couple of thousand cues in reality. And so the robot will always say the same thing and move in the same way, depending on what cue is being triggered at what particular time.
Do you know what year it is?
Spillikin is now on tour in Britain. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
Now that's going to wrap things up for us. You've been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, our engineer, Dan Crafton. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In December, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani signed a Charter of Citizens' Rights, supposedly to serve as a guide for the government in observance and advancement of the fundamental rights of the nation of Iran. In it, the government pledged, among other provisions, non-discrimination and equality before the law, irrespective of religion. In recent days, that pledge appears to have been broken repeatedly. The New York-based Center for Human Rights in Iran reports that one of the seven Baha'i leaders who were arrested in 2008 and are serving a 10-year prison sentence because of their faith has not been accorded the early release he is entitled to under the law. His family says that Behruz Tavakoli, an elderly former Baha'i community leader who has spent nearly 9 years in prison for his faith, suffers from heart disease and is in urgent need of an operation and care he cannot get in prison. Prisoners of conscience are often denied medical care in Iran, and Baha'is remain one of the most persecuted religious minorities in the country. In late February, Mohabbat News reports that the IRGC arrested two Christian converts, a mother and her son, Anousheh Rezabakhsh and Sohail Zarkarzadeh Sani, in the city of Urumiya. Their Bibles and other religious literature were seized in the raid. UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in Iran, Asma Jahangir, expressed concern in her recent report over the targeting and harsh treatment of Iranian Christians from Muslim backgrounds, as well as members of various Sufi groups considered deviant faiths. In yet another case, the Center for Human Rights in Iran notes that Muhammad Ali Tahiri, founder of a spiritual arts and healing group, who was supposed to be released from prison in May 2016 after serving a 5-year sentence for insulting the sacred, has again been tried on a charge for which he had previously been acquitted, corruption on earth, which could result in the death penalty. President Donald Trump has noted that religious freedom, like all fundamental human rights, is not a gift from government.
Freedom of religion is a sacred right, but it is also a right under threat all around us, and the world is under serious, serious threat in so many different ways.
It is past time the Iranian government lives up to its charter of civil rights.